So what did you think of President Obama's speech on Syria last night? Did he make the case that the U.S. must act to stop Syria from using chemical weapons again? A vote to authorize military force is on hold as a plan for Syria to give up its chemical weapons is worked out. But the president says the threat of force remains on the table should the diplomatic option fail. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 11th. We'll talk with a political scientist this hour about what the president had to say last night and welcome your questions and your reactions too at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And you can weigh in on the big question overall that we have online, and that's whether or not you approve or not of how the president is handling this crisis in Syria. Our guest is Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, the director of the Marquette University Law School Poll. He's also a co-founder of Pollster.com and founder of PollsandVotes.com. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Well, let's just I'm going to be playing some various clips, and we'll go into the various aspects of his speech last night. But as a political scientist, what stands out to you most about President Obama's address?
I think it's the situation that you've gotten here with Congress signaling how reluctant they are to vote for this, and a president seeking military action, but now having to find an alternative way to do that. Presidents of both parties, at least since World War II and arguably before that, have progressively expanded the president's ability to act unilaterally. This administration is one of the first in recent years to go to Congress for authorization before doing that. That contrasts with the Libya situation that we had before. Various resolutions have been voted on before, but not as directly as this. So I think that's maybe the most striking thing. Presidential authority has expanded on the use of military force. This time, permission was asked, and it's been very difficult to get.
Yeah. And is it clear to you, Professor Franklin, if the president asked Congress to put the vote on hold to allow diplomacy to run its course, or if the votes just simply weren't there?
Well, I'm sure there's a little bit of both. The votes are difficult to get if you look at there are at least three different counts of members of Congress's announced positions. And, of course, there's some variation in that. But it looks very hard to get to a majority vote in the House of Representatives. The Senate, probably a little bit easier, but only by a modest amount. What we saw in Great Britain, though, was when Parliament rejected the use of force for the British, what a strong slamming on the brakes that made. Major ally, our ally in Iraq and Afghanistan, backing away from this because the representatives of the people in Parliament were unwilling to go there. A vote now that definitively rejected the use of force would be a worse position for the president to be in as a diplomat than leaving it ambiguous and unknown whether he has the votes there. So from a diplomatic point of view, it may be better for him not to push the vote through either way.
Yeah. What exactly do you think he was trying to achieve with last night's address? After all, they announced he was going to make this speech before this deal to avert a military strike, that Syria would give up its chemical weapons was even announced.
I think the deal for the giving up their weapons or putting them under international control really has dramatically changed just in 48 hours what Tuesday night's speech was intended for. If the vote had moved ahead without that deal on the table, then the Tuesday night speech was a last effort to persuade the public and the Congress to go ahead and give authority to use force. As it shaped up, last night's speech was one to say, let me lay out all of the answers to the questions the public and the Congress have. Will this be effective? How will we not get deeper into it? Does this mean a new quagmire? Why? What is the moral reason why we should act in this? And so in that, the speech probably would have laid out those issues anyway. In light of this potential for international involvement in controlling the weapons, it meant that the president was also able to hold out the prospect of diplomatic action still as a real possibility rather than imminent military action.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about what he did actually say last night. He said that he understands why any sort of military action is unpopular, and that he knows that we have just gone through Iraq and Afghanistan. And he even said, I have spent 4.5 years working to end wars, not to start them. But he says this is not going to be another slippery slope into another country's civil war. Let's take a listen.
I will not put American boots on the ground in Syria. I will not pursue an open-ended action like Iraq or Afghanistan. I will not pursue a prolonged air campaign like Libya or Kosovo. This would be a targeted strike to achieve a clear objective, deterring the use of chemical weapons and degrading Assad's capabilities.
So what is your assessment, Professor Franklin, as to why a limited targeted strike is so unpopular?
I think there are a couple of questions. One is, in retrospect, I mean, today is 9/11, so 12 years ago today, in effect, this country went to war and has been at war ever since. If you look at whether it's polling or you look at the casualties we've suffered or you look at the limited things we've achieved through the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. And finally, if you look at Libya, which initially looked fairly successful as a case of American intervention, but is in a delicate situation at this point, I think there's an understandable skepticism of the public and of Congress about the ability of the U.S. to step in and affect the situation in certainly Middle East countries. So I think that's one thing, and you cannot look at the president's situation today without that as background. What I do think is maybe a little peculiar is what he describes in the speech is so limited and so targeted that it's unlike the more open-ended involvement in Libya, certainly unlike the full-scale invasion of Iraq. And so for a president to choose to ask congressional authority for that kind of extremely limited strike is a surprising giving up of presidential prerogative. A longer-term, bigger commitment, that would be, on the face of it, more the kind of thing that would require congressional or demand congressional approval. So I think there's an interesting little division here between what he sets out in his speech, which it seems to be so limited, and the decision that this is important enough that Congress has to commit to it.
Well, we'll talk in just a bit about the possible diplomatic a solution, but he did say that plan is on the table because of the threat of force. Does he have a case there?
I think there is a case there that a credible use of force is certainly an addition to the negotiation that takes place. It was striking that when Secretary of State Kerry mentioned this as an alternative in a seemingly dismissive way, how quickly the Russians proposed it seriously, how quickly the Syrians said they would be willing to accept this. Now, as we've seen in the discussion since those developments, there's a good deal of reason to be skeptical about how this will be implemented. Can it be implemented? There's a long list of questions there. If you think of the limited goal, which is to get the Syrians not to use chemical weapons, then this set of initiatives may, in fact, come close to achieving that goal. So I think that's the positive side and the hopeful side. You need not believe that the Syrians will necessarily turn over every stockpile they have or that the UN will be very successful in enforcing this. As long as the Syrians don't use the weapons again, then the U.S. will have achieved its diplomatic goal, even if through a route that we didn't really anticipate at the beginning.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. We are talking about President Obama's address to the nation last night on Syria, and we are welcoming your questions and your reactions, too. And we invite you to weigh in on today's big question. Do you approve or disapprove of how President Obama is handling the Syrian crisis, at least so far? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I have therefore asked the leaders of Congress to postpone a vote to authorize the use of force while we pursue this diplomatic path. I'm sending Secretary of State John Kerry to meet his Russian counterpart on Thursday, and I will continue my own discussions with President Putin.
I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. That, of course, was President Obama last night in his address on Syria. We are talking with political scientist Charles Franklin about what he had to say, whether he made his case, and we will find out a little bit on whether the public thinks he made his case or not as well. And we're welcoming your input, your reactions, your questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What do you think of the president asking Congress to postpone the vote on authorizing the use of force in Syria? And what do you think of this diplomatic path? Will this plan work? And Professor Franklin, will this plan work?
Well, that's a wide open question. I think something that we should have emphasized earlier is that the Russians are a strong ally of Syria. And until this week, they had largely resisted any U.S. proposals for controlling chemical weapons and so on. So I think that was the big development, is to hear the Russians say that they are willing to support a international oversight of chemical weapons is an important diplomatic step. Now, there's plenty of room to wonder how sincere they are, whether this leads to actual control of the weapons or an extended diplomatic exchange at the UN that leads to nothing. So there's plenty of reason to be skeptical there. But from a diplomatic perspective, having the Russians actively engaged in a public attempt to limit Syria's access to its chemical weapons, that was an important diplomatic step this week.
Now, didn't Russia just yesterday say that the deal's off the table if the threat of a U.S. military strike is still on the table?
Yes, or something close to that, at least. In the normal diplomatic negotiations for something like this, the Russians have staked out a position which says we can move ahead with this international intervention, but without the use of force, you have to back off on those things. This, I think, will be part of the normal negotiations, and we know how difficult it is for the UN to pass binding resolutions of any kind. But it is also where the skeptics of the Russians have a point, and that is simply that's whatever does come out of the UN may be so weak that it's ineffective. I think the counter to that has been that if the goal is that the Syrians not use the weapons, and if we can plausibly verify that they have not used it, then even a weak resolution that reaches that goal is what we set out to accomplish. In that sense, it's worth remembering how limited what the president's proposals are. It's not about removing Assad from power. It's not about massive step up of our support for the rebels against him. It is this very limited goal on chemical weapons. And to that extent, even a limited diplomatic agreement at the UN could produce the goal that we seek.
Well, here's a reaction from Matthew on Facebook. This is the day that America stopped being a superpower and allowed Russia to take the lead. Obama is a disgrace to all Americans who gave their life for this country. Is this Putin taking the lead or Obama taking the lead, Professor Franklin?
Well, I think it seems this strange situation where an accident of speech by the Secretary of State was seized on by the Russians, but then provides a potential solution for the U.S. Implicit in Matthew's comments is that the U.S. should have acted unilaterally, that the president does have the power to commit us and to do things. So I assume he's a supporter of intervention under that theory. But the underlying question here is, what is the right role for a superpower in the modern world? And this difficult distinction between a democracy that rests on consent of the public and support from elected officials, on the one hand, versus the role of nations and powers in the international system who act like the princes of old. If you think of Machiavelli and the prince, the state, the nation must act rationally to achieve its goals. It behaves like a super person. That's a deep distinction between democracies where we are not a single sole unitary actor led by a president who does whatever he wants, but we need consent here, versus in the international system where the actions of nations need to be credible. They need to be backed up with threats. And so I think we're seeing a bit of a distinction there about the limits of a democracy behaving as a unilateral actor.
Now we have lots of callers with reaction. Let's go to Jean in Eau Claire. Hi, Jean. What do you think?
Hi. I approve, the diplomatic plan as presented by the president last evening. We have a true leader in our country that listened to the people before making his presentation and his decision on when to go to the Congress. And I think that he is doing an outstanding job, and I am very pleased with the work he's done. Especially, he got Osama bin Laden, and we didn't have a big fanfare before he did it or after. And I think he's a true leader to be respected.
Thank you, Jean. I'm going to get another comment right away, and then Professor Franklin, you can react to both of them. It's Brian in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I think my comment was somewhat echoing the caller before me, and that I really think it was setting an interesting precedent that Obama was really saying that he wanted to go before Congress and the people of the country and receive approval for this. And I think what is interesting about that is it sets this precedent for any leader after Obama to really follow suit and puts a, we think back to George Bush and some of the military actions he took part in and didn't seek that approval. It really sets an interesting precedent for anybody who follows after him.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brian. But he can act without that approval, can't he, Professor Franklin?
Generally, yes. There's, a great debate between presidents and Congress about exactly where the limits of the president's war-making ability lie. But presidents in general have felt the ability to take unilateral action as a matter of national security, and Congress has occasionally complained, but has rarely acted to cut off military action. I think all three of these callers actually raised the point with Matthew arguing for broad, strong presidential powers, and Gene and Brian suggesting that this is a an appropriate seeking of congressional support. I think we have seen over these last 12 years such a shift in the public's attitude towards the use of force. Going into the Iraq War, over 70% of the public thought it was the right decision to take. That started to dissipate over time. In recent polling, anything from basically an even split between saying it was the right or wrong thing, or in some polls as much as a 60-40 split saying it was the wrong decision, shows in retrospect how much 12 years later we look back on Iraq and Afghanistan without a sense that these were clearly the right things, whether they were clearly worth the cost and so on. So now prospectively stepping into involvement, that's interesting, and yeah, backing off from it.
Yeah. Well, we'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, also the director of the Marquette University Law School poll, talking about President Obama's address before the nation last night, discussing Syria and the deal to avert a U.S. military strike against Syria. And we're welcoming your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org.
And so to my friends on the right, I ask you to reconcile your commitment to America's military might with a failure to act when a cause is so plainly just. To my friends on the left, I ask you to reconcile your belief in freedom and dignity for all people with those images of children writhing in pain and going still on a cold hospital floor. For sometimes resolutions and statements of condemnation are simply not enough.
I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up now on 7:37 on this Wednesday, September 11th, we are talking about President Obama's address to the nation on Syria last night and welcoming your reactions and your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also vote in our online poll. Today's big question: do you approve or disapprove of President Obama's handling of the Syrian conflict? That's online at WPR.org. You can also find it on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. And just wondering, getting some reaction from you, Professor Franklin, on that excerpt from the address last night that we just heard. He has President Obama's getting it from the right and the left over this, isn't he?
Yes, I think there are a couple of ways to think about this. One is in the run-up to this this asking for Congress to support him, a number of people on the right criticized him for saying there was a red line the Syrians could not cross, and if they did, there would be consequences. And these critics pointed out correctly that the Syrians had crossed that line and the president had done nothing. And so they used this to point to ineffectual leadership from on his part. The criticism from the left was more on the lines of presidents have led us into wars in the past and we do not want to go into this one, and pointing to the irony that a president who's run within the Democratic Party in 2008 stressed his opposition to the Iraq War would now be a president pushing for a war of choice, or at least in a military use of force of choice, that this was also something that folks on the left didn't like. In a way, the president, by asking for a congressional vote, forced both sides to look in the mirror and decide what their position would be. If Congress voted for the use of force, then Obama would clearly have the authority to do it. If it voted against it, then critics who say he wasn't acting would have that issue taken off the table, and it would force Republicans to either vote for or against the use, and it would force Democrats to do the same. So I think in that we've seen these developments push critics of both the left and the right to take positions which earlier they were free to criticize but not have to take a position themselves on.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jim in Dubuque, Iowa is with us. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, thank you. I think the populations of the Western world are beginning to realize that a big stick is not the best way to deal with a hornet's nest. I think it's good that we'll have some delay here and opportunity for hopefully independent analysis of whatever evidence there is. I've read recently of a report from the UN saying that the videos that we have been presented with as evidence are faked.
You saw a report from the UN on that?
Yes.
I don't know about the UN, but I've certainly heard that people think that maybe it was not the Assad regime that was responsible for the chemical attack, that it could have been the rebels, and it might have been a mistake, and there's other theories. But what about that? Has the Obama administration made the case that it really was the President Assad that right. was responsible?
I think that this is the sort of dispute about what the facts really are, which makes action so difficult, that makes it so hard. If you don't trust your leader, when your leader says, we have incontrovertible proof of this, then it's very hard to say the president should be able to make the call, because we trust him to make the call. That's as true of Democrats who would criticize President Bush for saying we have proof of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. It didn't turn out that way. So I think this comes up as a constant and difficult situation for a democratic society pursuing diplomacy and military action as part of that. I do think that the delay here is something that gives a little more time for diplomacy to work, gives the Syrians a little more time to perhaps reconsider whether their use of chemical weapons, assuming they're using them, really is effective and in their interests. And that ultimately is the question. Do they see the use of these as necessary to their military survival, as achieving goals within the country, perhaps, of their own, horrifying the opposition and maybe reducing opposition? Or do they see the potential costs, whether it's U.S. military action or other things, as costing them more than any value they get from the use of the weapons?
Let's go to Ashley in Winchester now. Hi, Ashley.
Hi. I just wanted to kind of touch on, nobody's really talking about what they're going to do to bring these people to justice. I mean, babies died, and yes, we want to stop the chemical weapons, but I don't, from what I've heard, if they do this resolution, I don't think I'll ever live to see the day where these people actually go to trial and be brought to justice for these deaths. So I'd like to hear a little bit more from the guests about how we're going to enforce putting these people in jail for what they did wrong.
Yeah, this is where the international system is not as efficient as an American court system is. Just for example, one of the precedents for this is the Bosnian and Herzegovina civil war in the 1992-95 period. We are still having war crimes trials in The Hague arising from that conflict. And so justice here is both uncertain and exceedingly slow. And that's simply a fact of life in the international community. The fact that we're having war crime trials from the 90s at all is perhaps a indication that international justice is moving a little more than it used to. But it certainly means that perpetrators of chemical attacks or other kinds of atrocities certainly have a very long time to wait before trials, let alone punishment, take place. But it's not without some precedent that eventually people are jailed over these things. But it's very, very slow.
Well, Brian on Facebook says, the president at most made a case for having al-Assad charged with crimes against humanity at the World Court. He did not make a convincing or compelling argument about bombing another sovereign nation.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, again, sort of the core of the division between saying what they're doing is morally awful and saying we should take unilateral action or even multilateral action to affect that. You know, I mentioned the breakup of the former Yugoslavia and the atrocities that went with that. The other case from the 90s is the Rwandan genocide, which killed 500,000 to 1 million people. 20% of the country apparently was killed. And the U.S. and the international community largely stood aside from that as well. Bill Clinton has often pointed to that as one of the regrets of his presidency, that inaction. But at the root, this is the dilemma of international actors, and especially of a superpower such as ours, which has the ability to intervene, but does not necessarily have the ability to produce a good outcome in the end. And when is it better for us to stand by the side and wish that innocents, or for that matter, guilty, were not being killed in horrible ways? And when should we intervene? When is the moral demand that we not stand silent so compelling that we have to step in? That's a huge dilemma for the country, and it's a huge dilemma for a superpower that wants to be a force for moral authority in the world.
Let's go next to Laverne in DeForest. Hello, Laverne.
Good morning. Yeah, I stand with roughly the 70% that think Obama bungled this. 2 years ago, he called for Assad's ouster. The only reason we're in this now is because then, roughly a year ago, he drew a red line, which then he tried to go back on. reasons not to trust this administration, NSA, IRS, Benghazi, Fast and Furious. I suggest people Google Leon Panetta / Syrian chemical weapons. It wasn't too long ago that one of the rebel forces, and I don't know which one, overtook a military base in Syria that had chemical weapons at that base. And at that time, when Panetta, CIA director, testified, he did not know whether or not those chemical weapons had been secured by the rebels or whether they were still in the hands of the military of Assad. So another point on...
I'm sorry, because that's a big point. You want to react to that, Professor Franklin?
Yeah, this is... part of the issue is that the lines between the rebels and what territory they hold and the Assad government is fluid and has moved back and forth. And there are reports that some chemical facilities may have been overrun by the opposition forces. So control of those weapons, who has them, that is, in fact, an area of uncertainty and certainly argument about who has what and who might be responsible for it. I think the other part that Laverne raises, which is worth noting, is that string of events from regretting the conflict in Syria to drawing bright red lines and saying that publicly, and then the implied commitment that you must act if those lines are crossed. That's a good example of how a phrase of a sentence, not even a full sentence, puts presidents in general into a position of having taken a position and then not being willing to fully act on that position. And ultimately, I think we come to the question of the ability of the U.S., as powerful as we are, to impose a solution on a problem. And I think clearly here we are far from being able to do that. Removing Assad from power does not produce clearly desirable outcomes. Leaving him in power does not produce clearly desirable outcomes. And the U.S.'s ability to affect something as massive as that is far more demanding than just a limited targeted strike.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. We will continue our analysis of President Obama's address to the nation about Syria last night and the latest developments with Syria, and continue to take your questions and views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
America's not the world's policeman. Terrible things happen across the globe, and it is beyond our means to right every wrong. But when, with modest effort and risk, we can stop children from being gassed to death and thereby make our own children safer over the long run, I believe we should act.
So, do you agree with that or not? What are your thoughts and questions after President Obama addressed the nation last night on Syria? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking about the president's speech with Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University. So we are not the world's policemen, and that this is a modest action to prevent children from being gassed, Professor Franklin.
I think that's a very interesting sentence if you think it through. The one is admitting the limitations that we do stand aside as moral atrocities occur in the world because we can't affect them. But a second part is the claim that a very limited and very low-cost intervention is available, that in itself is maybe debatable. That we can launch missiles or cruise missiles is certainly not debatable. But the second part, that it would be effective in stopping the atrocities that we oppose. That is a connection that's much, much harder to make with any kind of assurance. There's no question we can attack Syrian command and control bases. There's no question we can target pretty much anyone we might want to target in Syria. But the efficacy of those attacks in achieving the goal of ending the use of chemical weapons, that I think is the big gloss in the president's sentence there, that these limited means which are available would be effective in achieving our goals. It's the effectiveness of them which I think is very much in doubt. For people who oppose U.S. intervention, the question of should we intervene no matter how horrible the moral outrage, that's a different kind of question. But I think the way the president phrased it makes the case for intervening, but makes a claim about efficacy, which I think is much more debatable.
Let's go next to Ted in Green Bay. Hello, Ted.
Hi. Just wanted to address Matthew's email from earlier that literally was just lifted talking points from Fox News yesterday. And right on cue, no matter what Obama says, there's going to be a contrarian view on the other side just spit out. The point, though, I really want to make is that no matter what we do, there's always the law of unintended consequences. 12 years ago today, we suffered some huge losses because of things that we've done earlier. And that's not to say it's the United States' fault, but there are always going to be repercussions for any act that's taken.
Professor Franklin?
I think that's a good point. And repercussions which are sometimes somewhat foreseeable, but often are not foreseeable, whether that is in terms of who ultimately rises to power, sometimes that's better for us, sometimes it's worse for us. Sometimes those people are morally better. Sometimes they're morally worse. So I think there are unforeseeable consequences in that. The other specter that has been raised by some opponents of the president's policy is the potential for retaliation against the U.S., that this in some ways could provoke terrorist attacks against the U.S. Coming from various forces. I do think there is still another side to this many-sided issue, and that is that the opposition forces that are in this civil war are also hoping for U.S. intervention and support and are puzzled at how limited they see the U.S. Support for their opposition is. From our side, we see a variety of forces engaged in opposition in Syria, some of which we might be comfortable with, some of which we're very uncomfortable with. So it makes a complex situation all the more complex.
Yeah, so do we know, Professor Franklin, I know that you look at public opinion polls a lot as the director of the Marquette University Law School poll and with pollster.com and pollsandvotes.com. What are the American people, I guess, convinced that the approach now is the right approach?
In a word, no, mm-hmm. Though what the approach is maybe debatable. Overwhelmingly, we've seen 2-1 opposition to military intervention prior to the president's speech. Multiple polls by multiple different pollsters have all turned up something in the ballpark of 60% opposition to intervention, 30% support. So I think that's telling. In the run-up to the Iraq War, 60% to 3/4 supported intervention in Iraq. So we're looking at very different public opinion situations. I think that's partly reflected in Congress. Now, there was an overnight poll by CNN saying that people largely agreed with the president's position. But that position is now very ambiguous. It's a position from the speech last night to pursue diplomacy for now, but and even to delay a congressional vote, but with the military option still on the table. When asked more directly, do you support military intervention, that instant CNN poll last night still showed a substantial majority opposed to military use of force. So I don't think the immediate indication is the president moved the meter on intervention, though he may have convinced some people that his position mixing diplomacy and the threat of force is an acceptable position.
Yeah, you may not remember the poll results, but what do we think of the president's leadership on this whole issue?
Yeah, this has been a mixed bag, and I think it's one where partisanship, and some of our callers today exemplify this, intervenes that Obama supporters have seen some upside to his behavior. Obama opponents see it as very bad behavior.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy at Marquette University, director of the Marquette University Law School poll. You can vote in our online poll. So far, 77% of you disapprove of how President Obama is handling this Syrian situation. You can find that at WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.